Welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Shahbuddin. Since taking control of Afghanistan in 2021, the Taliban government is rolling back the rights of women and girls. The country is also suffering from an economic collapse and is in the throes of a deepening humanitarian crisis as winter conditions worsen. On today's show, we ask simply, how are Afghans coping? Joining us to discuss the latest from Afghanistan, from Kabul, Ali Latifi, a freelance journalist covering Afghanistan for Al Jazeera. In London, women's rights activist Shukriya Barakazi, and also with us from Kabul, Samira Saeed Rahman, advocacy and communications coordinator for the International Rescue Committee. And of course, for those of you at home, we want you to join the conversation, so be sure to share your thoughts and questions with us on YouTube. Thank you for joining us. This is obviously an important conversation, so many angles to discuss. Samira, I want to start with you with a basic tweet just from moments ago, Amnesty International, highlighting all the ways the Taliban has banned women and girls in Afghanistan, including playing sports, appearing on TV, attending university, going to the gym, working for an NGO, attending secondary school, as well as traveling over 72 kilometers and accessing healthcare without a male. Now, that list aside, I mean, all these restrictions coming lately, what is most troubling to you, Samira? What's the latest?
You know, the economic situation has really driven the humanitarian crisis that we're facing right now. Currently, we have over 28 million people in requiring humanitarian and protection assistance. As of December 24th, at the end of last year, female aid workers are not able to work in national and international NGOs. There have been exceptions made for the health sector. However, you know, female aid workers are essential for aid delivery. I was in Paktika earlier in the summer during the earthquake. I arrived on the second day there. Mm-hmm. And it's really an example of how essential it is to have female aid workers. This is a conservative country. It was the second day of the earthquake. Most of the women were still in their tents, had not gone out to access healthcare services that were able to be, that reached that area. It wasn't until I was able to go and speak with the community elders and assure them that we had female mobile health teams present there that they were able to access these services. For us at the International Rescue Committee, we have over 3,000 female staff in our organization. These are not just frontline staff, including doctors and nurses, but also staff in mm-hmm. support roles, in admin, in finance, in operations, in management. And we feel that it is impossible for us to deliver safe and effective aid to the most vulnerable communities if we don't have women working at all levels of our organization.
And that's certainly a fact that's easy to understand. Shukriya, when we look beyond sort of some of those latest restrictions, specifically the one we were talking about there, let's look at some of the headlines actually that we put together that kind of highlights some of these restrictions. I want to ask you, what is the real impact? What worries you most in terms of how this is impacting women there right now daily?
I'm not talking about the humanitarian crisis. When you see Afghanistan is in a bad crisis, and that's the impact of Taliban policies and the totalitarian or their brutality in Afghanistan. If you see the absence of justice, the form of the government. So I don't know how a militant group can govern, but this is how the situation is. Mental health condition, if you see the political issue, the backlash of Afghanistan 2 years before was a different Afghanistan, but if you see today is a big prison for their own citizens. That's maybe by very simple sentence I could say. Just imagine you and Veer for a second, you can eliminate and erase half of population from every single aspect of life. Mm. Is that pleasant or not? And this is like a half of body will become a disabled. What you will do with the other half one? Even you wouldn't be able to eat, to cook, to walk, to watch, even to talk. So this is the society is like a body. So half of body is been purposely was getting to be out and to be erased and to be disabled.
And
that is very sad because we pay a lot of time, energy, and human resources in the last 20 years to build Afghanistan, to put Afghanistan back
in a right
track and
train. Of course. And you know, I want to also include in this conversation two women on the ground there in Afghanistan, two university students, a journalism student and a medicine student. Have a listen to what they have to say.
I remember my university entrance exam period, how hard I tried until I entered the department I was interested in. Then, when I went to university, everything flashed in front of my eyes like a documentary. All the pain and my hard work flashed in front of my eye. With just a piece of paper, with a writing and a signature saying that girls don't have this right. It ended everything. It is a very bad feeling. I was really sad. They closed everything for us, parks, baths, and everything. And now the only hope we had was going to university to complete our studies there, to become a good doctor and serve our society. But they took that from us as well.
Ali, I'm sure you've spoken to many women who are echoing some of what we just heard there from those two. What can you share with us about what you're seeing on the ground and whether there's a chance these restrictions, the latest ones, might be walked back?
To be quite honest, the chance of the restrictions being walked back seems kind of a pipe dream, because at this point, it's all up to the leader of the Taliban, the so-called Amir, and he seems to be the most adamant to take back these rights, to try and, you know, keep girls and women from many aspects of society. But the one thing that we have to remember is that the Afghanistan of 2022 and 2023, and I know it's hard for people who are not here to understand this, is not the Afghanistan of 1997 and 1998. You know, we saw these young girls, even with all of the restrictions, they still tried to go to university. They still took to the university entrance exams. They still dressed, you know, fairly normally, considering all of the restrictions that the Taliban have put them under. And the truth is, we can't say the country is disabled, because there are still women and young people and men going out and trying to live their lives as much as normal and trying to, you know, be a part of society as much as is possible before the Taliban. You know, they all say, we're going to try and keep pushing this as much as we can before the Taliban take everything away from us. And I think the more we say that, you know, absolutely everything is stuck and absolutely everything is disabled and locked away, the more we're taking agency away from the Afghan people and giving it to the Taliban. And yet what we're seeing is that the Afghan people have not given up. You know, after the university ban for women, we saw male educators, we saw male students walking out protesting in Ninghar, Kandahar, and Kabul, and Bamiyan, and Badakhshan, and all of these places. We also saw female students walking out, you know, in Paktia when they reclosed the secondary schools for girls, you know, which were open for about a week, making it the third province where secondary schools were still open for girls. We saw girls as young as 12 walking out on the street and protesting and going out and demanding their right to an education. So we have to remember that as much as the Taliban is trying to restrict people and is putting all of this weight on people, we are in,
yeah,
the best word to use may not be the right word, is a fortunate situation where people are still trying.
And, you know, I appreciate all that context that you provided. It's really critical to sort of understand not just what's happened, but where we might be heading, you know. And I want to ask you, with that in mind, I'm going to come straight back to you just quickly, Ali. You know, this tweet that I saw a few days ago, a Kabul University professor ripping up his diplomas on live TV in Afghanistan, it's been making the rounds. Just what you said there made me think of it. You know, this idea of solidarity from men. Is it enough? Is it critical in your mind? Are we seeing men perhaps be as worried as women? You know, what is your read on the ground, and what do you make of these sort of moves?
So when the university ban came out, I was with my family. So I was with a group of men and women, doctors, government workers, educators, young girls as young as 9 and 14 and 22. And the men were just as upset as the women, you know, and as the girls. And we saw immediately in the aftermath that men took to the streets as well. You know, in Ninghar, we saw medical faculty students refusing to continue their studies until young girls could also continue. And I really think that that was the thing that changed everything in this country. You know, everyone now says that that was the death knell in the Taliban's coffin. The countdown is on now. You know, they've gone too far. They're burying themselves and their government alive at the moment. So I really think it has, you know, slowly woken people up. We have to remember that in this country, you know, this idea of walking out on the street and protesting, you know, since the 70s hasn't necessarily had a good reaction. But something like, you know, what these faculties are doing, what these students are doing, these are very important, impactful stances. You know, they show a solidarity. They show that the people are not willing to accept what's happening in the 1990s for the 5 years that the Taliban ruled Afghanistan.
And, you know, when we hear this, Shukriya, I want to ask you, there have been reports that, you know, even I think it's mannequins now in shops, Shabnam Nasimi on Twitter here saying even female mannequins' faces must be covered, that the Taliban's ordered all shopkeepers.
It's also male mannequins.
Say it again, Ali.
It's also male mannequins.
Also male mannequins. So, yeah, when we see these sort of repressive or extreme, for lack of a better word, moves, where does hope come that the situation can be remedied, that women can be treated better, but that also, you know, economically and the humanitarian situation at large will be addressed?
Allow me to say why today Afghanistan is different than before. When in 1996 and 95, Taliban took over Afghanistan, that was Afghanistan after civil war, where the same shock as today, the university girl describe her situation. I had the same feeling at that time because I passed that, and I understand what does it mean to be hopeless and to be just because of the gender, because of your girl, your woman, you cannot do nothing. And so it's very suppressing. But that time it was not as a normal life in 2021, the people of Afghanistan and the new generation, where they don't know what was happened, what was civil war, what was the Taliban before or first Taliban. Even during the first Taliban, where despite of I wasn't complete my, let's say, education, I lost my kids during the civil war, but I run an underground school against the Taliban policy as educated women in my society. Would you, at that time, I never thought that Afghanistan will be connected back to the world and Afghanistan will be a part of that world. Mm. And luckily today, the communication, the connection, the technology, the social media, local and international media, the awareness among the people of Afghanistan, which is still Afghanistan, despite of the Ukraine, still is the center of attention.
Right.
And, so and, these and, things are and, make me and give me hope.
Right.
I don't believe Taliban will change their mind and mentality unless as the alternative, which is the people of Afghanistan, should raise and a unified voices from the outside of
speaking about raising your voice, speaking about raising your voice as well as technology, we do have a video that was sent to us, rather an audio recording, a message from someone who's anonymous, a woman who is sending it to us from Jalalabad City, talking about how the fear factor really can take hold. Take a listen.
It is very scary to talk about women in Afghanistan, as we are completely destroyed by the de facto government. Women and girls in particular are affected by multiple forms of discrimination and violence. The same situation is with myself. I am the responsible person of my home, my family, but now due to the banning of women work, I am also not allowed to work. I got stuck at home. Just let me know how to provide the basic food items to my family.
Samira, when you listen to that, you hear sort of her outline her personal situation, knowing how that factors into the scale of the humanitarian situation that's unfolding, that you shared with us, that's deepening. What is something to pinpoint in terms of trying to address immediately? What's the biggest danger to you?
Well, you know, just as that voice message was saying, many of the women that work for our organization and for NGOs, other NGOs across the country, are the sole breadwinners for their families. This is a country that has gone through 40 years of conflict. We have many widows. We have many female-headed households. And most of these women are fearful of what's to come. And on the other side, it's the beneficiary side as well. You know, because we have so many female-headed households, it is essential to having women, that we have women as a part of humanitarian response. As I mentioned, 28 million people in this country are in need of urgent humanitarian support. Compared to pre-August 2021, we have an additional 6 million people that are facing hunger. We have over 900,000 people that have lost their jobs over the course of that time period. The worsening economy, you know, the economy collapsed. Mm-hmm. It wiped out decades of what had been accumulated during that time. And at the end of the day, it is ordinary Afghans that are paying the price. We see the economic impacts even down to, you know, the currency. This is the notes that you can get on the streets, in the shops.
Yeah.
If someone does have access to cash, these are the notes that they're getting. And often it's women that are getting the worst notes. What that means is that the humanitarian situation disproportionately affects women and girls.
Like so many of the pressing situations there, I think the same could be said. Ali, you were nodding as we were listening to Samira outline the humanitarian situation. And I think it's worth sharing with our audience. Perhaps you don't know, today reports that 70 people were killed just by the sort of wave of freezing temperatures that have been sweeping across the country in the last week. That includes tens of thousands of cattle. I mean, you know, in the grand scheme of all the different things we're speaking about, that may not seem like such an important issue, but it is, Ali. What can you share with us about the humanitarian situation and also specifically if there is any hope in the horizon? What in your mind would be a way out of this crisis?
Well, the way out of the humanitarian crisis is for the international community to understand that their sanctions, their aid restrictions, their banking restrictions, their cutbacks, all of that, even their suspension of aid and assistance work is not affecting the Taliban in any way. You know, it's not affecting the Taliban leadership. It's affecting the Afghan people. The reason Afghan people have old banknotes, the reason it's so difficult for them to take out money, the reason it's so difficult for them to transfer money, the reason there's such a capital flight and businesses are afraid to invest and close their offices and, you know, media outlets shut down, all of this is because of the lack of investment in Afghanistan. You know, during the Western-backed Islamic Republic, 75% of the government expenditures came from foreign aid, from different types of foreign aid. And so when you take all of that away, what you're doing is you're not starving the foreign minister of the Taliban. You're not starving, the Minister of Interior or any of these people who may be on blacklists and sanctions and so on. You are starving the kinds of people that Samira needs to reach out to.
Well,
kinds of people that I run into on the streets.
With that really clear and level-headed critique, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. But I'm wondering, you know, the UN Security Council has made all these calls, right? They call on the Taliban to reverse policies that are targeting women and girls in Afghanistan. On Tuesday, I believe the Security Council also called for, you know, full, equal and meaningful participation of women and girls in Afghanistan. It sounds, I mean, you know, you're kind of laughing, and I'm not trying to say you're laughing at what's being said, but you know what's going to come next in terms of the next question out of my mouth. I mean, these things sound lofty, and we shouldn't dismiss them, but in the absence of opportunities for the NGOs that are working on the ground, or what is in your mind really going to change in the short term the trajectory of the country in terms of its humanitarian crisis?
Like I said, the only thing to really change the humanitarian crisis is for the world to accept that the more you cut off the country of Afghanistan, as I said, you're not cutting off the foreign minister, you're not cutting off the interior minister, you're not even cutting off Haibatullah, the so-called
Amir. So keep the aid coming is your, keep the aid coming, the money coming.
Keep, not just aid, I think this is the other problem. For 20 years, we were made into this ridiculous aid-based economy. No one actually worked on development and creating long-term sustainable foundational economy that can sustain itself. You know, we can't just keep relying on aid. There has to be some work towards a real sense of a sustainable economy where people can work for themselves and provide for themselves. You know, we can't just keep focusing on handouts.
Shukriya,
and that's what's been happening over the last
Shukriya, 20 years. Go ahead. Jump in.
First of all, is there any accountability during the last 1 year and 7 months? Taliban
was there accountability in the last 20 years?
$2 billion, number one. $2 billion this foreign aid that went to the pocket of Taliban. Ali mentioned before
Wait,
yeah,
I just want
those foreign agencies.
I just want to. Did it go to the UN or did it go to the Taliban, Shukriya?
It went to the UN. The UN put out a statement saying it goes to them through private banks. It does not go to the Taliban.
Okay, continue.
The UN themselves put this.
All banks. Let me.
Let's not argue. I just wanted to challenge you on that. Let's not argue this.
No, I'm not arguing.
Yeah, what's your point?
Go ahead. I just want to give. My point is, the Central Bank of Afghanistan aren't receiving that aid or anything money,
mm-hmm.
and that money supposed to go to those people where Samira is working. We all know the United Nations. They don't have any kind of relationship. The central bank is not an independent body. It's a body which is running by Taliban. And that's why their order is going to all other private banks.
So Shukriya, I appreciate the point. I want to give Samira a chance.
So technically,
yeah.
The money goes to the pocket of Taliban. We are not saying to stop foreign aid. We are asking.
Okay. So I appreciate the point. I'm just, because of time, I'm going to go to Samira. And I want to ask you, Samira, what do you make of that allegation coming from Shukriya? And where do you see the primary focus needing to be?
Well, the $2 billion in aid that has come to this country over the course of the last year has been implemented through the United Nations as well as international and national organizations on the ground. This $2 billion is what prevented a famine in the country last winter. Well, we are fear this winter, as mentioned by Ali, it's minus 20 degrees here in Kabul, let alone the rest of the country, which gets far colder. People are having to decide between food and heating. And that decision becomes even more difficult with the worsening economy. As humanitarian aid organizations who have suspended their operations due to the fact that women are not able to work in our organizations across many sectors,
right.
What this will mean is that if we're not able to deliver aid at the same levels, mm-hmm. if not more than what we did last year, and use that money that we've received over the course of the last year, this is going to be a horrific winter for the Afghan people.
All right. I appreciate you making that point. I want to play for you just one other thought. This is a video. Listen to two mothers explaining their situation. Take a listen.
Since the beginning of winter, our situation has been very bad. We spent 2 months with support of some of our friends, but during the last 4 days, our financial situation has worsened. We didn't even have anything to eat.
If my husband has to come here to receive aid, how will we find those 50 to 60 Afghanis that he is earning? I have to come here at 9 a.m., but have not received the aid yet. So if he has to come, he will have to quit his job.
Ali, any closing thoughts? Can you leave us with a sentence or two that maybe can instill some hope in this convo?
The hope is that the Afghan people are still trying to live their lives as much as possible. And they are still finding ways to sort of step out against the Taliban. We've had elders come out in several provinces, from Kandahar to Paktia to Bamiyan
right.
to Parwan, against the high school limitations in 30 provinces. So there is, you know, movement.
There is movement, and this is obviously a story that's going to continue moving, and we will move with it. That is all the time that we have for today. Thank you, Ali, Shukriya, and Samira for joining us. We'll continue to follow updates from Afghanistan here on the stream. You can always find us on Al Jazeera www.afghanistanaid.com.